And welcome to Double Cross Radio. We are live in Jefferson, be that the state of Jefferson or the Jefferson Republic. I'm pushing for the Jefferson Republic. We'll see if we can make that happen. That is up to vote next month in Siskiyou County, California. By the way, I'm your host, Drew Lamb. My co-host, Chuck Horton, is currently on vacation in Ecuador. He's looking for South American countries to possibly move to, if need be. We've been looking at a lot of places like Chile and Argentina, which is not high on my list, and Uruguay, which looked pretty good. But he's in Ecuador right now, checking that out, trying to find a place where he could live free. And maybe we'll get an update from him tonight. Probably not. And hopefully we'll have him back on the show next week. I have a very, very special guest tonight. My friend Fritz Springmeier is back. I think this is the fourth time that Fritz has been on Double Cross Radio. And he has some bombshell news for us about the Illuminati, and we're going to get into that tonight. But first, I want to get into some news, specifically nuke news. And I also wanted to congratulate our friend Jordan Page. His wife just had a baby. I believe this is their fifth child, and their baby is named Judah. And Jordan is the voice of the Jefferson Republic. As many of you know, Jordan toured with Ron Paul during his campaign, and he's toured with Oath Keeper, Stuart Rhodes, Judge Andrew Napolitano, and he does the bumper music for our intro. Chuck and I licensed that song from him. So we got to see him recently. He came to our Jefferson Republic Liberty concert and put on a wonderful show for us. So it's really nice to hear that there is another page in the world now. And so I'm going to get into some energy news here. I was just looking through the headlines on anynews.com, and I'll go over some of these with you. Hold on to your seats. Expert, there's just a few of the birds left in the high contamination from Fukushima plant. Things are not looking good. Spider webs looked strange. Animals' response to radiation over twice as bad as in Chernobyl implies effects are stronger in Fukushima. I've seen some pictures recently of insect mutations that have been happening in the vicinity of Fukushima. And primarily with aphids, aphids are showing all sorts of unusual mutations, multiple legs, double abdomens, and mutations that you usually do not see in nature. Actually, it's my understanding that genetic mutations are fairly rare in nature, but they're becoming more and more prevalent. And I recall just couple of months ago seeing a picture of conjoined whale twins that were found dead on the beach off the coast of Mexico. And there's more news about sea life in the Pacific. Over 50 dead seals, sea lions, whales, walrus recently stranded in Alaska. Dozens of seals suffering from baldness, skin sores. Experts comment here, marine transported Fukushima radionuclides may present a new stressor to the ecosystem. More news here, nuclear fuel fragments from Fukushima found in Europe, 10,000 plus kilometers from reactors. Study, plume directly from North America, hot particles, a significant part, radioactive releases, quickly spread over entire hemisphere. Film shows core material on Norway air filter. And this is pretty consistent with my studies of this event. Just after the meltdowns began, well, I guess we can call them meltouts now and not meltdowns. But shortly after 3/11/11, I was picking up very high levels of radiation on my Geiger counters. In one case, it got over 350 CPMs while it was raining. I've talked about this on the show extensively, radioactive food, most of it grown in the San Joaquin Valley down in California. And also there's an organization out of Norway called NILU that's kind of like the NOAA in the USSA, and they were doing preparing radiation dispersion models. And so they were plugging data from that they were receiving from TEPCO about the radioactive releases and putting into their computer model to show where the fallout was going to go. And they were showing very, very high levels of radioactive material, including xenon-133, iodine-131, cesium-134, cesium-137. And then you had the EPA's RadNet, which was picking up radioactive materials along the West Coast and out to Hawaii. And they picked up plutonium in their sensors after Unit 3 detonated. So I've had a lot of people argue with me about whether or not we were going to get any of the fallout. A lot of people gave me a hard time, especially on Facebook, saying that it wasn't going to travel that far. You know, plutonium particularly shouldn't travel far, but when it's pulverized into an aerosol and blasted high into the atmosphere, it's going to blow. And apparently it did, and it spread all the way around the northern hemisphere. And so then you get rain out, and then that flows into the Pacific. So I talked to a guy, this is in November of 2011, that I met at in the Fed rally down in San Francisco, who had been testing kelp in San Francisco Bay, and it was radioactive. It was hard to tell what the source was, but we figured it was from rainout. It could have been from any other source, actually. There's some other disturbing news here about this. Author had bouts of nosebleeds, plagued by unusual fatigue after Fukushima plant visits. Group of newspaper journalists confessed to suffering similar symptoms. Official unbearably sick since 3/11. Many residents are too. They just don't say it openly. Worker, this is like going to war. And another article here. Alarm is record numbers of seals and sea lions starving to death along California coast. It just spiked. Calls started coming nonstop. So many unhealthy washing ashore. Extremely complex issue. Multitude of factors in play. Definitely a mystery. We're hoping it's not the new norm. And it's starting to appear that it is the new norm. We've been seeing this for a few years now. It started in Alaska, and then with problems with seals and sea lions having lesions and losing their hair, clearly showing signs of radiation sickness. And then we've seen a collapse in some of the fisheries in the Pacific, like the sardines are non-existent. And the starfish are melting. That's been a problem between British Columbia and Mexico. Just recently, it's been reported off the Oregon coast at Yaquina Bay in Newport. They're seeing a complete collapse in all of the starfish in the bay. They're just falling apart. And scientists are trying to figure out what's going on. They say they don't know. They say they can't link it to Fukushima. And I saw an article a couple of days ago saying that it's starting to happen in the Atlantic as well. So it remains to be seen what the cause is, but given that this plume's been airborne, it could rain out, and so it could spread into the Pacific. Actually, it could go over the North Pole, and I mean the Atlantic. It could spread into the Atlantic via the Arctic Ocean or through rainout. So there's all kinds of possibilities. Or it could be something entirely different. And then we've had issues going on at Hanford, right in our own backyard. There was an explosion over there a few weeks ago at the plutonium finishing building, and it's been covered up, and they've been letting go of some of their most experienced workers and bringing in inexperienced workers who aren't going to blow whistles. This sounds a lot like Fukushima, and this seems to be a trend in the nuclear industry. So this is an ongoing thing. I do not see how this could stop. You know, the Fukushima, they've lost the corium. They have all this water that's going through the site from the mountains and from the sea. Plus, they have to pump water into the reactors to keep the fuel, the spent fuel in the nuclear the corium cool. And so that leaches into the Pacific Ocean, and you've got, you know, buildings that are so radioactive that workers can't approach them, and it fries the circuitry of robots. And so they're trying something now where they're building an ice wall, an underground ice wall, to try to keep the water from flowing into the ocean. I don't see how that's going to work, because eventually the water coming from the mountains is going to go over the ice wall, or it's going to go around the ice wall, and it might just swamp the whole site. So I see that as a temporary fix. You know, there's a lot of water that flows through that site. I think something like, was it like 8 tons a day of water going through there? So I think they're just trying to make it look as if they're doing something, trying to do something, but it sounds to me like it's a pretty crazy idea. Fritz, what do you think? Have you been following this story at all?
Yes, I'm really interested in it. This relates to what you were going to bring me on to and have me talk some about, and this new openness, my connection with the hierarchy. They've been open for me asking questions, and of course I've been asking, there's so many topics to discuss with them. I haven't gotten to the Fukushima one yet, but I want to ask them what I'm referring to is I've been in open discussions with the Illuminati hierarchy, and I'm wanting to ask them questions pertaining to Fukushima and nuclear energy. I suspect that they want to reduce the amount of nuclear energy plants out there, but I want to hear it straight from them. I'm really concerned because if I remember correctly, the plutonium that's used, like at Fukushima, is 200 times more toxic than like the uranium that was used when we bombed Hiroshima. And so only 1 pound of this plutonium that you were talking about, if it was evenly distributed over the entire world, would kill all life. So this is extremely toxic plutonium. And it really concerns me that there's so much of it there at Fukushima and so much has been released. And I think about you almost every day I grocery shop, because like today when I grocery shopped, I avoid all of the produce from northern Mexico and southern California.
I'm not sorry that I made you so paranoid. It's very important to be paranoid about this. I try to avoid vegetables from those regions, and that was primarily due to the worst of the fallout so far that happened during the first 3 months or so of what I'm going to call the meltouts, and so we saw radiation levels and some vegetables that were 5 to 6 times background radiation at the time. So and it's good to eat low on the food chain. It's good to still avoid milk, I think, you know, if you can, and you know, or risk it. Just, you know, it picks up iodine-131. You can protect yourself in different ways by supplementing. If you can find good clean sources of seaweed, like from New Zealand, you could still protect your thyroid somewhat from uptaking iodine-131. But meat too, you know, the cesium-137 falls out onto the grass, gets phytoextracted, gets eaten by the cattle, gets picked up in the muscle tissue of the cows, and then we eat the cows, and then it ends up in our muscle tissue, primarily in our hearts, and then, you know, you see young people, athletic people, having heart attacks. And so it's pretty bad stuff. You can mitigate. There's ways to mitigate. I mean, I take supplements. I take magnesium to help protect my bones from strontium 90. That was a little tip I picked up from listening to Dr. Christopher Busby. I take a pre-Fukushima kelp supplement for my thyroid, and then I just try to select food that I think is going to be as clean as possible. And I grow a lot of my own food too, indoors. But again, it's impossible to completely avoid it. It gets into everything. And so, all we could do is mitigate and do our best to try to stay healthy. And, you know, and it can be bad for your health to not eat certain things. You need vitamins and minerals, and so you have to eat. It's hard to get around it. So you just have to limit your risks. So Fritz, back to this new I don't know what to call it, Illuminati Glasnost. The Illuminati seem to be trying to be more forthcoming, I guess, or more open. And so you've been contacted by the hierarchy, and you've been in communication with a couple of the guys that are at the top.
Yes, indeed. This whole thing's been a process. You know, in 1990, I began researching, writing about them. In 1991, I came out with an incredible large book about them, and started exposing in 1991 the Van Dyne family. The next year, in one of my articles, I actually described William Cornelius Van Dyne, who's now the head of the Illuminati. I didn't know who he was. I just knew of him from somebody who was coming out of the Illuminati, told me about him, but they didn't tell me his name. So I actually wrote about, and that was long before he took over the Illuminati, which he took over in 2009. The older generation, like David Rockefeller and the other leaders of the other families, were just as you would imagine the elite. They were very, without thinking ahead of time, I'm not sure what adjective to put to it, but just exactly like people would imagine the Illuminati to be, that's the way they were. But the newer generation, there's a gap there, and when they pass the baton to the newer generation, the newer generation had different ideas on things. Plus, what we've had is in their plans, they have already built into their plans that they were going to have an externalization. It's what I've been telling people, the externalization of the hierarchy. That's why you see Lady Gaga and Paris Hilton and Jay-Z and Beyonce and all these other people. They're doing all these Illuminati signs and stuff.
Right.
And I thought it was just going to stop with just, you know, these low-level entertainers doing, you know, all these little occult signs, the one-eye thing and the pyramids and stuff. But no, it actually, they decided to take it to a higher level. And that's a combination of several things. One is people like myself have pretty well, you know, dialed in. Or I should say, I have dialed in. Nobody else was really dialing in about the Van. Nobody else dialed in on the Van Dyne family. I was the one that exposed them. And what happened was, you know, I've been doggedly running, pursuing these people, trying to get information on them. And they actually admired my integrity and my fearlessness. Of course, I did 8 years in prison. But at any rate, while I was in prison, the older generation passed the baton to the newer generation, and William Van Dyne took over, and he decided to continue the externalization of the hierarchy. But not only that, but he decided he wanted to take it in a different direction than it had been going in. I mean, some of the things are still on the agenda. He didn't totally rewrite the agenda, but he made it a little bit more gentler. And one of the things that he decided to do was it's sort of like an efficiency expert going through and weeding out all of the lowlifes or the bums that aren't really contributing to the whole thing. So he went through and in the weeding process, basically he didn't leave much. They pruned the Illuminati way back. And in the pruning process, they got rid of 300 clubs and organizations like the Skull and Bones, Scroll and Keys, these fraternal organizations. They disbanded the OTO, that was a very powerful organization, and he stripped the committee of 300 of their power. They still exist, but they have lost any decision-making process. So that he's really changed things around. He pissed off a bunch of people, and some of the old-timers would like to see him dead. So I didn't realize the full extent of what he was doing, but I noticed when he took over back in 2009, because I've been following the Illuminati for 30 years, I noticed that there was a shift in things so I was telling people, I've been telling people for several years that the Illuminati has gone to the slow track. You know, they went from the fast track to the slow track on their agenda. That's the way I was describing it, because I was seeing the things that I expected to happen weren't happening like I expected. So I knew that they had shifted gears, but I didn't realize that it's more than just a shifting of gears. He's actually taking them in a slightly different direction than they were headed. And so we've got two things kind of coming at each other kind of on a collision course. One is I'm working as hard as I can to expose them, and then they're deciding that they want more openness. And last year at the Bilderberg conference, they talked about being more open. And so I took the initiative of asking if I could get a handwriting sample of William Van Dyne. And the reason why I do that, people that have that are close to me, they know that I've been a certified graphoanalyst for many years. I've been a certified graphologist even longer than that. And I've used handwriting analysis to try to get an unbiased look at people's character and personality. And I felt like, you know, if I really wanted to understand these people, I needed to get an unbiased look, you know, because it's people today, they've been so conditioned to fear these people and hate them that you know, they're convinced that there couldn't be any good in them. So I felt like there was some kind of, you know, something positive going on here at the top, and I wanted to find out really in an unbiased way if I was reading the situation correctly. So I asked, and I didn't have any idea how they would respond. I mean, typically most people would say no. I mean, my ex-wife, she would not let me see her handwriting until we got married. So typically, most people don't want their personalities known. But surprisingly, Mr. Van Dyne gave me a number of handwriting samples, and I did a personal analysis that whenever I do a handwriting analysis, it's based on scientific principles. It's just totally based on the handwriting itself. And then it's personal. So he got it, and he was stunned. And the next day, they told me that they wanted to use me as their conduit to continue this process of externalization. So they told me that they would start providing me with information on their Bilderberg meeting that's coming up in Copenhagen very soon. And they have. They provided me information on that. They provided me with materials that are going to be used in it, a list of the guests, the topics that they're going to discuss. And the listeners can go to my website, pentracks.com, and I have put up the list of the guests as they know it now. If the guest list gets revised, I'll put that up. But they're giving this information to me exclusively, and I have been able to build a rapport and mutual respect with them. You know, and a lot of people are horrified because how can you trust these people at the top? And I understand exactly where all of these people's concerns are, you know. But I believe that we need to step out in faith, and we need to step out in love, and move forward. We already know where things were going before this glasnost happened. You know, it's like Gorbachev coming to Reagan and saying, and going to United Nations too and saying, hey, I want to end this Cold War. I want to get rid of all these nukes. I want to get rid of the tension. And you know how everybody responded? And it's a Soviet commie trick, you know?
Right.
Well, that's the way everybody's responding to this. Most people are going, oh, Fritz, you can't trust these people. This is an Illuminati trick. Well, you know, there's all kinds of possible scenarios as to how this thing will finally end. Who knows? You know, God knows that. But the thing is I have faith in God that no matter what happens, the Word of God teaches me, and also what I've experienced in life is all things work together for good. So I'm not in the least bit afraid of what's going on. I'm stepping out in faith. I'm extending trust, not because they have, not because I have known them for 50 years and we've built up 50 years of trust or something, but because the loving thing to do, if you read the scriptures in 1 Corinthians 13, is to extend trust to people, because that's the basis of all human, that's the foundation of all human communication. So I've extended trust to them. They're extending trust to me. We're having good communication. I'm asking them questions on things. Today, I was working on understanding how Kennedy was assassinated. So I'm getting answers for everybody. And so hopefully everybody won't hate me for continuing to do the research.
Well, the way that I see it is that it works in their favor if they're open. You've been poking and prodding, trying to get information for decades, and you've been successful. And then you release the information. They don't have any control over the information, the content of the information, the flow of the information, and they can't add details, you know, or their point of view. So this way you could still continue with your research in the way that you go about it, but there's another facet to it now, which is being able to ask them about what you know, what you've learned, and get feedback and their perspective.
Exactly.
It could be, you know, be truthful, or it could be a lie.
Exactly. And I'll take the Bilderberg meetings, for example. I wrote a recent post up there on Facebook which was my information on the Bilderberg meetings. Well, basically, if you read that, I know everything about their meetings already, you know?
Right.
So by being open, what they do is they remove everybody's suspicion that they're plotting all these evil things.
Yes, right.
By showing us their topics, they actually, because it says in the Word of God that people love the darkness because their deeds are evil, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, I think William is really trying to improve the kind of deeds that they're doing. And he's told me that they're taking the Illuminati from having all these Satanists and doing all these pedophiles. They've gotten rid of those, and they're going towards the philosophy like what Adam Weishaupt had. So, and a lot of people respond, oh, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, you can look at the glass as half empty or half full, you know. And I'm the type of person that appreciates a little bit, you know. To put it another way, you know, a lot of people have described this as a prison planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have substituted an extremely satanic, pedophile, crazy warden, and now we've got a better warden who's, he's still in charge of things. He's still going to run things, but he's not as crazy. You know, I, for one, am saying, well, great. You know, I'm grateful for whatever I get. And maybe it's not going, you know, the glass isn't all the way full, that's true, but it's half full. I will be thankful or grateful for what we have. So I'm grateful for this glasnost, this openness that they have created with me. I'm really I find it remarkable at the kind of questions that they're willing to answer that I'm asking, you know. How many years have we tried to understand what went on in the Kennedy assassination, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be fun to bring some of these things into better focus. Maybe it will help both sides. Maybe it will reduce some of the fear out here with the man in the street, and make it easier for things to be done constructively in the world. They've been doing a lot of constructive things behind the scenes, but whenever I've shared that with people, because I write Facebook posts, as
sure,
you know,
right.
Every day almost, and the reaction has been really negative. Nobody wants to hear that these people could possibly do anything good.
Well, let's talk about Van Dyne's good deeds.
I have on Facebook, and I got such a negative reaction. I felt like I was casting my pearls before swine. he's talked to me about some of the things that he's done, and I haven't mentioned them all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's just talked to me about how he feels about things, and I'll give you an example. He's concerned about people going hungry. He's concerned about the toxins in the soil and our bad food. He's concerned about a lot of the things that you and I are concerned about. And he's been quietly, you know, anonymously trying to change these things. But whenever I try to share a little bit of what he's been doing with people, they think that he's trying to promote himself. He hasn't tried to promote himself. He's just shared these things privately with me. He hasn't asked me to brag about them.
Right.
And so I'm now taking the viewpoint that it's backfiring on me to say anything good about him. I'll just let him continue to do his good deeds anonymously, because, you know, God sees all these things in secret, and he'll reward each of us in secret. I know people don't want to believe that God can work in the hearts of anybody. They want to believe that he only works in their denomination or with them.
Right.
But God works in the hearts of all men. And Cyrus, King Cyrus, who allowed the Jews to return to Jerusalem, he was a pagan king. But if you go into the scriptures in Isaiah, it calls him a righteous king.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he was a godly Christian, but because he did godly things. He did righteous things. And so even pagans can do good things. And I know that blows the minds of some Christians out there. They want to think only Christians can do good things. But that's not the truth.
Sure. Do you think Van Dyne is behind the deaths of the bankers? Chuck and I have been following all of these mysterious banker deaths all year long. I think we're up to 15 or so.
Right from the start, he told me he was. And he told me he didn't mind if I told the world that. It was actually his administrative aide that was giving me this information. But, his right-hand man who works with him was telling me that William doesn't mind me telling that because he's trying to send a message to corrupt banksters that, their days of getting by with all this corruption are coming to a close. And
so he's working through a group called the Bureau?
Well, that's what he calls it. It's been around for a long time. He inherited it. He didn't create it. I've known since about 1993, and I suspected it before then, but somebody that had come out of the Illuminati had told me about their assassination bureau. So I was aware of their assassination bureau a long time ago. So he inherited that, and he's in a dog-eat-dog world. He's trying to turn the Illuminati in a more positive direction, and you can imagine in the world that he lives in, if he was namby-pamby and he didn't hold on to the reins of power, they would walk all over him. And so he's I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. I wouldn't want to be running the world. That's more responsibility than I want.
He might be just making some sound business decisions. I mean, for one, these guys could have information that could harm his businesses. If he's smart, he'd be trying to get these banks to change the way that they operate because, Max Kaiser refers to them as suicide banksters, ironically, or suicide bankers. And because they usually don't act with their own best interests in mind. They do crazy things, make absolutely reckless investments. And
yes.
And then they end up needing bailouts. And
that's what he's trying to stop. He's trying to stop the looting. These people are totally corrupt. They're looting the public. They're looting their banks. They're making bad business decisions. And they won't listen to anybody. And when he tries to talk to them about straightening their act up, a couple of them have threatened him. And of course, that he explained to me that once they threatened him, they didn't last very long. So
do you think with Van Dyne being so forthcoming with his team of 50 or so assassins, do you consider that somewhat of a threat to you, because you've already been smacked around a bit by these guys. You spent 8 years in prison for a crime you didn't commit, a bank robbery, and you were convicted on the basis of circumstantial evidence. Do you think he's kind of saying to you, okay, I'm very powerful, so don't get out of line here when I'm sharing information with you.
That possibility may exist, but if it was a backhanded, subtle message there, it was kind of wasted because I already knew it.
Yeah, and it's not that it would scare you.
I always treat them with respect.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, I have always tried to treat these people with respect, you know, even when I've been exposing them, like in my formula book, mm-hmm. I give a whole page mm-hmm. of these people, these Illuminati programmers, their addresses and whatnot, right?
Right.
Names and places, right? But at the top, you'll read, I make a prayer for them.
Right.
You know, I'm not out for blood. I'm out for their best.
Right.
Interest. And I've been encouraging people to love their enemies and do good to them. So I'm not trying to send them to the guillotine. And in return, it's been interesting because, you know, I talked with them about how people like myself were slated to be killed by them. And they told me, no, we want you to live.
Well, that's good. So jump ahead a little bit here in my notes, let's get to the plan for depopulation and how, you know, what is their point of view on this, and how does the Bilderberg conference play into this with one of the topics they're going to be covering? I know just from my own studies, I've spent a great deal of time when I was in my 20s studying Warren Buffett, and I studied Bill Gates, and actually I studied a lot of captains of industry, trying to learn how to operate businesses, and I worked in the corporate real estate world, and so I was trying to learn from these guys who had achieved things that I thought were great. I don't think they're that great any longer. But I noticed that both Gates and Buffett talked about population reduction, and had some, especially in the third world, it was something that was very important to them. And I think that's something when they get together to play bridge, that's probably what they talk about the most. So.
You know, this whole idea of population reduction goes way back. So it's not something that Van Dine created. It's a way of thinking that he inherited. I'm sure that he got brought up, like you say, these people, when they sit around and play bridge or whatever they're doing, talk about the masses of that need to be culled, and there's too many of us lowlifes running around. And I'm sure he grew up around this his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk to these people, I see that they have this mindset that the world's overpopulated, that there's a lot of worthless, useless eaters out there, and that they really, you know, I think it's really in their minds, they really sincerely think they're doing the planet a benefit by getting rid of these useless eaters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they perceive themselves as doing something evil. I think that they perceive themselves as actually benefiting humanity by taking down the population. And then you can go back and look at the Rockefellers. They started financing population control through the Rockefeller Foundation and things like that, maybe back in the 1920s, certainly by about 1931, I've noticed the Rockefeller Foundation, which had millions, starting to give money to population control projects.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been an agenda for a long time. In the Bilderberg meeting this year, which is coming up soon, they're going to, one of their topics is the antimicrobial situation.
Right.
And WHO put out a very in-depth study, country by country, disease by disease, where they examine how resistant the world's population is to all these different diseases. And the sad thing about it is actually in various parts of the world, we're actually losing the ability to fight those diseases with the vaccines that they have. So, if we do get these plagues and stuff, which probably are going to hit us here sometime in the future, I don't know if we're looking at 5 or 10 years, but we could lose a lot of people to some worldwide plagues.
So are the Bilderbergers going to be looking at this as an opportunity, or are they going to be looking at ways to deal with this problem, ways to solve this problem, or are they going to twist it in some way and dream up some new vaccines that do away with the useless eaters without the mess of, you know, of plagues?
Yeah, good question there. Well, they've been open and forthright to they've been open to me that they have this agenda to take the world's they say by half.
Wow.
They want to reduce it by half. When you look at some of these other leaders out there, like you were talking about, some of them even go even wilder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'd like even more than half.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ted Turner types.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's a good question. And I know on the surface that they're like looking at this like, oh, well, how can we help keep humanity strong? But I also know that's kind of contrary to what they want to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, my suspicion is that they're going to be content with it running its course. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's actually some books out there, and it's not just the Illuminati. It's like, in general, people have come to accept that the world's overpopulated and needs to be reduced. I've seen a couple books that praise the Black Plague. One of them is totally about the Black Plague and says that it was a blessing for humanity.
Oh. Jeez.
Yeah, they kill 2/3 of Europe and it's a blessing?
Yeah. No, it's a curse. So I guess it'll remain to be seen how they decide to address this problem with drug resistance. And maybe we'll see a combination of things where they will make it appear that they're trying to deal with it, but in the background they know that it's something that they want to happen. And right. to further their agenda.
Right. We've seen in history the elite kind of running two tracks at once. So
sure, you have different factions. I mean, I see this as a huge opportunity for the medical industrial complex. And, you know, and they're like, oh, we've got new vaccines to deal with this antimicrobial resistance. And we've got new stuff. And, you know, and it's, you got to have a chip that releases the stuff, you know, and it'll be some sort of a thing, you know, to scare you into getting these microchips, and this just might be it. I'm not going to get one. I don't care. I'm not going to get chipped, even if it means I can't trade or can't get on the internet or whatever. I'm not going to do it. I opt out.
Right.
So, So how can people survive the choline? You're writing about achieving excellence. Can you elaborate on that?
Okay. That was on a recent article. And, you know, I don't have all the answers, but one thing that I have noticed that has been beneficial to people in just day-to-day living, as well as surviving catastrophes, is to have some kind of excellence that makes you worthwhile. And the example that I gave there was 142 Jewish engravers that the Nazis pulled out of a couple concentration camps, and they worked for the Nazis making up counterfeit bills, and they survived World War II. There's other examples in history too. You know, like in the Roman Empire, if the Romans found somebody who was highly skilled, they would, sometimes these people went into the emperor's palace. You know, they would be an advisor. Well, we see the same thing in the Bible. Joseph, because of his ability to interpret dreams as well as his wisdom, became Pharaoh's advisor. And Daniel was another example. Mm-hmm. Someone who, because of his excellence, that excellence was admired. I have a friend who, he grew up on an Oregon farm. Brent grew up here in Oregon on a poor farm. And because of the poverty, he was highly motivated to learn how to be rich. And he decided early on in life, he was going to make it his life's task to study the elite, these Illuminati elite, figure out how they made money, and then copy that. Well, he really made it his life's occupation, and he became so good, and he was a man of integrity, that he ended up being the financial advisor to a number of these Illuminati kingpins. And then later when he retired, he became a friend of mine. So the point is that the Illuminati are like everybody else. They respect quality. They respect integrity. They admire excellence. And so if we want to make ourselves worthwhile to the world, we should have something to offer the world. And so that was one of my suggestions. Another thing that I really strongly believe that would be important for people to survive is the answers out there to make yourself invulnerable to cancer, to these degenerative diseases, to these bacterias, that come through the flus and stuff. There are answers out there to make ourselves healthy, you know, and you've been talking about some of them. You know, we don't do ourselves any good to eat sugar, which is a toxin, to eat refined flour, which is a toxin, to eat things that are going to make our blood pH acidic. The American diet is atrocious. The American diet's really basically toxic and will kill a person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people are addicted to. They don't. And people need to step out and take responsibility for their health.
Mm-hmm. I agree. More shopping at the farmers' markets.
Exactly. Find yourself some trusted farmers and shop at those farmers' markets. You know, 15 years ago here in Portland, we didn't have the farmers' markets.
Mm-hmm.
I got out of prison. And I discovered that there's farmers markets all over. What a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's a change for the better. Not everything gets worse.
Right. I've found the farmers markets to be incredible. I love going to the farmers markets. I don't usually sell at the farmers markets. I've done a few, but I usually sell direct to restaurants. But I've met some incredible people, and there's some wonderful produce out there, and the markets don't just have produce. There's bakers there and people selling compost and all kinds of things going on there. But it's a real true agora, an open marketplace. And if you want to be healthy and you want to get outside of the medical industrial complex and big agriculture and get around the banks and all that, go there and barter and trade or pay in cash or, pats on the back or whatever. And you're going to not just change your health, but you're going to change the world around you. And you're going to have a tighter community as well. I've met some amazing people that I've learned a lot of things from at these farmers markets. I met a guy that produces seed, and his seeds are bioregionally adapted. So if I buy my seeds from him, I'm going to yield more crops. And so I'd never thought of such a thing. So there's some incredible resources out there just right there, and they're not at Walmart.
Yes, these big multinational corporations like ADM, Monsanto, that are trying to kill us. And people need to quit complaining about these things because they're in a position to do some positives. You don't have to support them. You can go to the farmer's market and you can help the farmer that's trying to grow organic food, that's trying to stay in business, that's not a big corporation.
Yeah, absolutely. And the money's staying in your community, and if you're paying cash, you can put it in his pocket and get more use out of it than letting the banks have their cut and the governments and all of that. And so you're getting around the system there and helping others do the same. Fritz, we're coming up to the end of the show here. It's always a pleasure having you on. I really appreciate it. And this is some incredible information that you brought to us tonight. And you're welcome to come back anytime.
Well, let's do that. You know, this whole thing about me getting to pull the curtain back on Mr. Van Dyne, it's really, and I'm not saying this in a bragging way, I'm just saying it truthfully, it is the biggest story of the 21st century so far, mm-hmm. and it's gone right by the alternative media and the regular media. Nobody's picked up on it, but thanks for having me on the show. Let's do this again soon.
Okay, well, good night.